First of all, I'm very happy to welcome Deacon Marco Rakovic to present him to you. He and his wife moved into our parish from Kentucky, the Diocese of Lexington, where he served as a permanent deacon. He's here with us in the Washington area as part of the Federal Commission on Mining Safety and Health. So we're very happy to welcome him. And he is from one of the better states in our union, Kentucky, the land of bourbon and racehorses, much better than lands of fruits and nuts that we have in our country. But be that as it may, we continue on this Sunday in our reading on the Sermon on the Mount. Recall, Jesus began with the Beatitudes, those attitudes of right living, of right being. Live the Beatitudes, and we will have Beatitudes, happiness. So we will have that happiness, that joy that only God can give now and to be fulfilled perfectly in heaven. Our Lord, though, went on and he said, if you really live these Beatitudes, you will be the light of the world. You'll be the salt of the earth. There's a real challenge for us. So to penetrate the darkness, to penetrate the insipidness of our present day and age, we have to be the light, the salt. Now our Lord goes on. He continues with six precepts of the law, four of which we have today. I have to say that, quite frankly, someday I hope to meet the guy who put these readings together. So you can go from a gospel one Sunday that has two verses to one that has 20. We could have a homily on each of these precepts today, but I will spare you. So, with that in mind, think of what our Lord is saying. He starts off by teaching, I have come not to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. We must remember that like the Ten Commandments, those moral laws are not simply dead letters. They're to be lived in the fullness of the spirit of those laws. Those laws are not simply on stone tablets. They have to be written on our heart. So our Lord wants to address these precepts and take them to a deeper meaning that has to be lived. So the first one is, you've heard the commandment, you shall not kill. We know that to purposely take the life of an innocent human being is a serious mortal sin. Life is sacred from conception until natural death. Granted, there are times when, because we have to respect our life and fulfill the duty to care for our life, that as a last resort, we may have to take the life of an unjust aggressor, a non-innocent person who is attacking us. So a country may have to go at war at times to protect itself. An individual, like a police officer, may have to take the life of an attacker, a criminal, who is harming, threatening harm to him or to someone else. But those are last resort actions. We, though, must uphold the sanctity of life, especially for the most vulnerable, the unborn, the elderly, the disabled. Notice, though, our Lord takes it further. It's not simply physical killing. What about the killing that results from anger? Anger is an emotion. It arises when we perceive an injustice. This can be very powerfully channeled in a good way, a sense of righteous anger, the kind of righteous anger that we see demonstrated at the Right to Life March, a peaceful march that tries to bring attention to the sanctity of the life of the unborn. When I was growing up, I well remember the civil rights marches in Washington, Dr. King speaking there. Those were peaceful demonstrations to channel a righteous anger against segregation and discrimination. This is very good. Too often, though, poor victims of original sin, that anger overflows into an unrighteous anger where we just lose our temper. We lose control of our tongue. Our Lord mentions this specifically when he talks about the power of these insults like raka, you fool, and the like. Words are very powerful. When we're angry, we can use words that really cut to the core of the person. We all know what it's like to be the victim of such words, the insult, the bad language, whatever it may be. We have to control our tongues. You spouses have to be so on guard with what you say when you're upset to that spouse that you should love, most of all, after God, where you think of parents and children, children and parents, friends and friends. We can really do great harm through our tongue. Things like detraction, slander, calumny, malicious gossip can kill. We all well know that the news media can kill the reputation of someone else. Social media can do the same. We can destroy another person through social media, or even just through text, tweets, things like that. To make the point clear, the Megan Meyer Foundation, it is named for a young girl, 15 years old, who took her life because of cyberbullying, an increasing problem in our country. They report that 34% of teenage students are cyberbullied or harassed. 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 10 boys, because of this, self-harm. That's tragic. Since 2008, attempted suicides for teens have doubled. And it's the second leading cause of death for adolescents. 1 in 20 children have experienced a suicide, meaning a friend has committed suicide. So parents, you have to guard your children. The idea of sticks and stones will break my bones, words will never hurt me, not true. These things can damage a person so much. And it can be constant, 24/7, the cyberbullying. So parents, guard your children. Affirm your children. And tell them frequently how much you love them and how important they are. Sometimes these victims of cyberbullying never tell anyone else. And for that, so desperately they take their lives. You and I need to control our tongues, especially when we're angry. Our Lord goes on, and then he speaks about adultery. Adultery is a very serious sin. The love of a husband and wife is sacred. It's a sign of their sacrament, their covenant, between themselves and God. Their love is so good it may even overflow in the creation of a child. To take that sacred love out of marriage, so a spouse engaging in such a love with someone else, is a very serious mortal sin. For a single person to engage in such love that should be reserved to marriage is a serious sin. And they don't think of the consequences even. Notice, though, that our Lord says one can commit an adultery in the heart. When someone, especially a spouse, looks at bad pictures, dresses immodestly, uses lewd language, frequents a place that is lewd, like a Hooters, where they're feeding the cravings of a libido more than a stomach, that is the spiritual adultery that our Lord is speaking of. The love, especially of spouses, has to be kept pure for each other. Granted, it's not always easy, especially in the world in which we live. And so, we have to guard ourselves and distract ourselves when these thoughts come in. At times, it can be very hard to reject these thoughts. St. Francis of Assisi was once so overwhelmed with these lustful thoughts, he couldn't get rid of them. So he threw himself in a rose bush. Now that will distract you. So if you need a rose bush, plant the rose bush. But our Lord says, take the drastic action. So if the cell phone, the computer is the problem, turn it off. Put it in the drawer. Say at 8 p.m., I'm done with this. Read a good book. Go to bed early with your spouse. But in all, keep your heart and your mind pure. But then our Lord goes on, and he says, you've heard the commandment, you shall not commit adultery. Keep in mind, for the Jews at this time, marriage was a contract. It was a contract between a man and a woman, and a man could divorce his wife, but not vice versa. The grounds were adultery. Adultery could be physical adultery, but it could be some other kind of infidelity. So if you went to a more liberal rabbi at the time, if a woman went outside without her veil on, that was considered infidelity, adultery. She could be divorced. If she burned dinner, that could be infidelity, grounds for divorce. Remember that this evening, you wives. And so the husband could cast them off. But our Lord says no. Marriage is sacred. When man and woman become husband and wife, they form an indissolvable bond. The two become one flesh. But this union, as Archbishop Fulton Sheen said, is not just between them. It's in union with God. And so it takes three to get married, three to stay married. This is why, for you couples, it's important to heed some statistical evidence. The Family Research Council found that in America, and this has been shown in many statistics, 50% of couples divorce within 5 years. That's tragic when we think of it. But couples who go to church together every Sunday, it drops to 10%. If they pray together, drops to 5%. If they don't contracept, drops to 1%. Who's the difference? God is the difference. God is in their lives. For those who face divorce, though, and sometimes for very serious reasons, we have to remember, vows were still taken. The state can break a contract, but it can't break vows. This is why the church seeks to help. And a couple or a person can come. The church will help that person. Maybe there was a defect in the consent. And this is where we have the idea of a declaration of nullity, that those vows were null even at the time they were taken. But this is important, and I encourage any couple or any person who's in this problem, contact a priest. But our Lord goes on, and he says, you've heard the commandment, do not take a false oath. Well, the Jews at the time could take different oaths by different things. They could swear by God, by the temple, by Jerusalem, by mom, by dad, and so on. Depending upon who was sworn by would determine how easy it was to break the oath. Jesus says, simply, say yes when you mean yes, say no when you mean no. Have integrity. Be honest. Well, we stopped there this week in the sermon, but it's important to take this to heart because our Lord wants us to live in His life. He wants us to live freely. He wants us to have life in heaven. When we live these Beatitudes, when we strive to be the salt, the light, when we live the spirit of this law, then we will find that beatitude, that joy, that freedom, that life that our Lord wants us to have. We will find a reflection in our lives of God Himself, that image in which we are made. So contemplate these precepts today. Continue. Go back to the Beatitudes. Reread it. Ponder it. To sum it all up, there's one simple beatitude. Blessed are the single-hearted, the pure of heart, for they will see God. That is the kind of heart we want so that we can see God now at work in our life and see God one day in heaven. May God bless you.